Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Bowhunter Chronicles podcast. This is going to be a special episode. We're going to be doing one of these once a month, helping out our friends over at Howl for Wildlife. So we had John on a while back. You can go check out that podcast, but you can check out howlforwildlife.org. They're putting out a monthly syndicated podcast across a lot of different podcast platforms to help get the word out about things that are going on in the hunting space across the nation. So these things are things that may not affect us in our particular region of the country, but believe me, and it's outlined in these podcasts, in the message, in everything that the anti-hunters are going to take wherever they can get it. And that's going to set a precedent to kind of move in on other hunting across the globe. So just because it's not in your area doesn't mean that at some point it won't affect you. So we're helping them out by putting their episodes out on our channel to get it in front of as many people as possible. So enjoy the episode. Thanks for listening. Go to howlforwildlife.org and make your impact on hunting, fishing, and conservation issues. Enjoy the episode.
Yeah, welcome to the Howlcast. This is a monthly update that we do here at Howl for Wildlife. And if you haven't heard about what Howl for Wildlife is, we're a 501c3. We're a nonprofit supporting the hunting community, primarily through developing advocacy tools at the website, howlforwildlife.org, where you can learn about you being hunters, anglers, people that are concerned about wildlife management and conservation, can learn about threats and opportunities that face the hunting community, and our action centers where things really happen, where the rubber really hits the road for our community. You go to howlforwildlife.org, check out the action center, and basically we make it easy for people to become advocates for issues that are important in the hunting and wildlife management space. The other thing we do at Howl for Wildlife is we're developing communications tools, mechanisms, strategies, and programs to help bring positive messaging about hunting, like hunting being good for critters. A lot of people that don't hunt don't see that, you know, it's not necessarily intuitive that if you hunt a population of animals, that population does better. But there's facts and data that support that. And so we're bringing messaging to the non-hunting public about the human side of hunting and also the wildlife management side that benefits animals on the landscape through hunting. So we're here to develop advocacy tools and steer public sentiment wherever we can to support hunting as an activity that's intrinsically human and benefits wildlife on the landscape. All right. So the three of us are here today. It's early February with what I believe is going to be the first kind of Howlcast update, just dishing on what's going on in terms of Howl and Very Sick threats and opportunities that we've got in terms of the hunting space and regulatory issues coming on online this year that we need to deal with and we're trying to get ahead of. John, you just brought up the hot topic of the yes. of the year so far, which is you were talking to Dan Gates from Coloradans for Responsible Wildlife Management about what's happening in Colorado. Should we dive in on that first?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I don't want to say it's the most important, but it's definitely important. And it's definitely a hot button right now for us in this space. So for anybody in the hunting community. So,
yeah. So we've been, just to recap for if you haven't heard about this, and it's possible because it's new and not everybody's plugged into all this stuff all the time. There's a ballot initiative that I will say that the anti-hunting industry has spun up in Colorado. They are out gathering signatures to get this on the ballot in November. And they've got about 4.5 to 5 months of window of time to gather upwards of 180,000 signatures from registered voters in Colorado to ban the hunting of mountain lions, bobcats, and lynx. Obviously, lynx are already protected, so it's kind of a null issue there. But they want to ban, and they're using the language trophy hunting and actually defining trophy hunting in statute, which is a first, it sounds like, for anything that we've seen in North America, at least. Which really creates, one, it removes management of bobcats and mountain lions, which are heavily regulated, but also hunting's the mechanism for management for those critters. But it's also really a slippery slope for all Western states hunting, all big game hunting, and certainly Colorado.
Yeah. And Mike, before we go any further on this, because this is going to air on a lot of different platforms, mm-hmm. and you're going to have people from all walks of life listening to it. And what I think needs to be hit home here before we kind of dive into the weeds on it, mm-hmm. is the understanding, or the lack of understanding that a guy who hunts whitetail in Georgia should care about mountain lion hunting in Colorado. But I'm just using that as an example.
Yeah, it's a great example. Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to pick something as far to the east or far away from Colorado as possible. You know, and I think it's that disconnect. Well, we see it with Alpha Wildlife all the time. That's that disconnect that the other side plays on, that's going to be our undoing. You know, mm-hmm. we need to draw the lines. Why lion hunting in one state or bear hunting in one state or elk hunting in one state affects a guy who doesn't hunt those things, who doesn't live in that state. What is the connection there? Why should I, who lives in Arizona, care about what happens in Colorado? That, I think, is the crux of what we should be talking about, so that people don't just say, oh, this isn't gonna, I'm not gonna watch it, I'm not gonna listen to this, this is not part of what I'm doing. And I just actually had this conversation with Dan. I was like, you know, having these conversations are already a tough thing. Like, if I post a how-to style podcast, you know, how to hunt elk or mule deer hunting tactics thing on my podcast, my personal podcast, Days in the Wild, if I do that, I'll see anywhere on the very low end of 5,000, mm-hmm. but on the high end of 15,000 downloads. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now that's a pretty big sway, but for the most part, it's somewhere between 10 and 12. Okay. But if I post something that is conservation oriented or talking about
regulations,
I can get less than 1,000. But yeah. If I got 1,000 to 1,200, I'd be mm-hmm. that's 10% mm-hmm. of what my normal, you know, 1,200 to 12,000 That's a big discrepancy. And it just goes to show me, it goes to show, and it shows me that it's very obvious that people don't want to listen to things that they don't think affect them. Or I don't like to think this way, but they possibly don't care, you know?
Sure.
So
I think it's more of that. I think it's just if, so let's say there was a conservation issue. I don't know why I call it a conservation issue. Let's say there was an anti-hunting issue in whatever person's state. Do they still care? I think that's what it is. Now, that being said, there's a certain subset of people who do care, and there's just a certain set of people who don't want to get involved in, let's just call it politics. Mm-hmm. So even if it is in their state, they're just like, ah, that's boring. This is going to depress me. I don't want to get involved. Mm-hmm. There's probably some of that too.
Yes.
So back up to what you're saying, John, like, okay, if a person is in Georgia and they hunt whitetail, I think that's what you said, why should they care about mountain lion hunting or the potential to lose mountain lion hunting in Colorado? Yeah. Now
connect the dots for
break
me.
Well, I'm not, I think, I mean, I know what you're saying, but there's a lot of ways to consider that. Which angle are you talking about? Or is it all of the above? Is it the angle?
I'd say all of the above, because because any given individual might have a reason to care if they knew all the reasons.
Yeah. So are we talking about people who might someday come to Colorado to hunt? Like they have points in Colorado?
Sure.
Are we talking about because mountain lion, they can affect populations of, say, mule deer in Colorado or elk in Colorado, and then that person in Georgia, they might come to Colorado someday, so they'd be concerned for that reason? Or are they concerned because the battle that's happening in Colorado will someday get to your state? What is it we're talking about?
I think we need to talk about all those, and I also think how we should talk. We should also talk about how losing something in one state minimizes our national voice. I think that's why I'm saying we need to connect all the dots, because it's really important for the listeners of this segment or this podcast to understand why should I pay attention? Why should I keep on listening to this? Oh, they're going to talk about Colorado. I don't live in Colorado. Why should I listen to this?
There's a third or fourth aspect of why they don't care. Why that? We'll pick on the Georgia whitetail hunter. Just for example, like you said, there's another reason why they don't care, because they don't think they can affect the outcome. Mm-hmm. And that goes across, you know, even the Wyoming hunter that I talked to at Cheap Show is like, it's like sucks what's happening in Colorado. They're neighbors. Like, I think he cares, but he doesn't know he can affect the outcome. And I think that's one of the most critical things that we need to drive on all of this, is that no matter where you are, we can go into why it's important, no matter where you are, what you hunt, for you to care and get involved. It's that you can affect the outcome too.
Sure. And, you know, in this particular instance, we're going to be talking about a ballot box. So there's even more of that. They're like, oh, well, I'm not a voter in Colorado. How do I get involved? We definitely should talk about that. Actually, Dan brought up something in my podcast that, or in our podcast, I should say, that was also another reason why I think people throw their hands up. He mentioned, he's like, I was appointed in, you know, this position and this position and this position by a anti-hunting governor, and he had a lot of unfavorable legislators that don't really care about hunting affirm him and all this other stuff. And I'm like, well, you just said something that's really important, because I think a lot of people throw up their hands. They're like, oh, well, I'm not going to get involved because we're going to lose anyway. That guy's an anti-hunter, or this is, a waste of my time because, you know, the last time I spoke up, we lost it anyway, because it's an uphill battle. So I'm not going to get involved. And his example to me is like, well, I mean, if you've ever seen Dan, he's like the textbook encyclopedia poster boy child of what like a trapper looks like, or what and I said
Yeah.
not to offend you, but like you're what the anti-hunters paint as a FUD. Like you are that
He's the
picture,
grizzly
right?
mountain man
Yeah,
that they would
exactly.
put that
So
they would take as the caricature of what they don't want.
So my point is, like, if a guy like him could get appointed into these positions by somebody like, oh, I hate to say it, like them, that are very anti what we're trying to do, then there is hope. You know, there is an open conduit, an open dialogue that you can be involved in, and however minimal you think your message or your money or your time spent is, it's still an inch forward, you know, like the
Well,
movie
this
Game of
attack
Inches
on
or
mountain
whatever,
lion
you
hunting
know.
has happened 4 times already. This attack on the mountain lion has happened 4 times in Colorado. So 3 times at the commission. The commission said, no, we're not gonna eliminate mountain lion hunting. And once at the Senate, in the legislature. And the senators, they bend to the wind of the voter, the political winds, direct what way they go. And while many of them may be anti-hunters, many of them may be neutral, but easily, but we assume they're going to be swayed towards the anti-hunting movement. Voices came out nationwide in support of mountain lion hunting, in support of wildlife management through science, in
Right, and
support of
look.
CPWW at that Senate hearing. And, 4 of the 5 senators that sponsored the legislation fell away, and it died in Senate committee, in committee 4-1. So right there, if those senators were all putting their fingers up in the wind to test the political winds of the voters in Colorado, and they sense that the voters of Colorado strongly wanted this, they may have gone forward with it as electeds. I think the fact that it failed there indicates, and it actually corroborates and supports what we're being told about this issue in the landscape today, is that it is not a strong, if there's a favorable, there's sentiment towards a yes vote on banning mountain lion hunting, bobcat hunting in Colorado, is a slight, they have a slight edge. They don't have a strong edge. And that means that the hunter in Georgia that aspires to becoming, going to hunt mule deer someday in Colorado, or the hunter in Tennessee that doesn't want HSUS popping up in his backyard or their backyard to tell them how to manage their whitetails or not manage their whitetails, et cetera, or bring panthers and wolves back to Tennessee. If they don't want HSUS on their doorstep, then those hunters in those other states need to, it benefits them to draw the line here in Colorado and join us nationally to bring the fight to Colorado.
Yeah, and those are all like super important points, and I'm just going to come out and say I want to come out and spell out some other things that are how this affects you. None of us here live here in none of us here on this call are from Colorado, but it affects all of us. And if you look at it, kind of the way you were talking about how how politics work, we have a voice. We have a voice as outdoorsmen, sportsmen, however you want to label us, like outdoorsmen. If we have a voice, and our voice is our actual voice, our speaking up, saying what we want, but it's also the money that is generated from what we do that goes back into conservation. So let's take, if you lose mountain lion hunting in Colorado, there is a portion of hunters in Colorado that only mountain lion hunt, just like you are a, die hard whitetail hunter in Georgia. That's your thing. You do that. If you lose percentage of population that only mountain lion hunts, okay, you just lost a portion of your national voice. And it this trickles down. Okay, you lost a portion of your national voice. Colorado just lost funding from those tag sales because all those people that are buying lion tags are no longer buying lion tags. And now that money is not there. So that minimized your national voice. It also, now there's less money for Colorado Parks and Wildlife to manage deer, sheep, elk, all the other big game species that are hunted in Colorado, and the non-game species, by the way. Okay. So now potentially there's going to be less opportunity because there's some less money there. Okay. You look at it from another standpoint, which Charles mentioned, more lions on the landscape, less management of lions means they're going to be probably taking more of the other game species that you hunt, like elk and deer. So that opportunity is going to go down. And once that opportunity goes down, there's going to be even less money, which minimizes your voice a little bit more. So like, you got to like look at it's death by a million cuts. Okay. You don't realize that you're bleeding out because you've got a bunch of little cuts, but you're bleeding out. There's these little things and it's connected directly to you. We all pay into the same, pot, so to speak, federally. Mm-hmm. Now on a state level, we don't, our state funds don't cross lines, but federally, we all pay into the same pot. And nationally, we all have a collective voice. So anything that takes away a little bit of that national voice is going to affect you. And you don't realize it. You don't think it does, but it's not seemingly affecting you, but it's affecting you. Yeah. So.
And the anti-hunting industry capitalizes on that because they fundraise. Heck, they fundraise internationally. They fundraise across state lines all the time.
Absolutely.
And they know that the outdoors community hunting, angling is fragmented.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And very species specific. You know, we focus on the species we're interested in, and we focus on the method of take we're interested. We focus on the state we're interested in.
Right.
And they capitalize on that. And that's why, you know, there's so much of a sentiment like, well, we keep losing. It's like, well, because we're not in the arena. Like, we're not,
right?
We're not in the arena where the game is actually played. And so, and that's why I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic because it's not like we've been so good at this. It's not like we've been honing the skill of fighting the anti-hunters.
Oh, we've been
for the last 20 years. Like, we're just getting started. Like, we're just getting out like the Stone Age tools ourselves and learning what to do. And so there's so much upside to getting every hunter involved at a grassroots level, as well as at a small monetary donation level. Like, literally, if everyone take half of a box, whatever it costs, a half a box of shotgun shells, half of a box of, you know, your center fire rifle, you know, cartridges that you hunt with, like that donation alone, if everybody steps in, like we squash this thing successfully where it stands in Colorado. And yeah. So that's so key.
And it's not even just that. Like, well, if you think about all the time that we spend preparing for a hunt, scouting, running trail cameras, shooting your bow, and you take all this time and all this effort that goes into looking at gear and whatever. It's, I mean,
couple minutes are needed. Just a couple minutes.
Right. You know, if you took 2% of that, 1% of that time spent and effort spent, and you put it towards this, we would, you know, we would be unstoppable.
Yeah.
You know,
Charles, you look like you want to say something, Charles.
Yeah. Sorry.
I always have a million things on my brain. I was probably moving my mouth open because of my, I'm just congested is actually what's happening.
Cause you're dying.
No. So like what you get back to is this national voice. And that's, first of all, we either have a national voice or we don't. We either are going to use it or we don't. And so, yeah, the person in Georgia, a win or lose in Colorado is a win or lose for that person in Georgia, whether they realize it or not. And what both of you were saying, and Mike was just touching on, you know, we're starting from zero here because, you know, we haven't done it really before. So he's optimistic. I am too. This is definitely what Hal does and what Hal has been doing on this specific Colorado issue. It's a perfect example because all we can do, which has been extremely powerful, is distribute information. Make sure people in all states know what's going on in Colorado. And if you're not in Colorado, what can you do if you're not in Colorado? Well, right now you can give money. And I think just yesterday, so the only state, and this is crazy,
we're down to one state now.
We call Save the Hunt Colorado, Colorado's for Responsible Wildlife Management, and now the Issues Committee. The only state they haven't got a donation from is Hawaii.
Come on, Hawaii, step up.
They've got donations from every other state, and that's just not one donation. Yesterday, I think there were 63 donations that came in to CRWM, and like all but 13 of them were out of state donations. So that is huge. And we are a juggernaut if we come together. We are bigger than the anti-hunting, whatever you want to call it, conglomerate, coalition, if we actually all come together. Yeah. And what I mean is, and that's sportsmen, that's hunting and angling and shooting sports. And you know what, sportsmen, who was I listening to, Mike? Was it? It was Andy Stump, Cleared Hot. He had on Tom Opry, who does the Shepherds of Wildlife and all that. But he had him on his podcast, and they're talking about sportsmen and like that word. And Andy said, it means you're giving the animal a sporting chance, which means it's fair. It's not a sport.
It's not like frivolous. Right? It's not. Yeah. And that's another word. Like they manipulate the words.
Yeah.
So like, recreational means it's frivolous and full of folly. No, it's just non-commercial. It means I can't go out and sell it. Like recreational is the opposite of commercial. Sportsman means like you said, thank you for that, because I've wondered,
I never had anything to do with sports, and he actually went back in history and talked about sporting. where it kind of came from, about giving something a sporting chance. You know, it has a chance, it's free range, and
give it a head start.
Yeah, we got to get Tom on. That guy's he's awesome. But anyway, that's where I heard that yesterday. But yeah, they take these words, sportsmen, trophy hunting is a huge one, where I mean, they're placing their bets on trophy hunting. They're placing their bets on their definition of trophy, hard, saying we just go in and take the head. I mean, and we have laws in a lot of states that prevent that. Number one, specifically in Colorado, there was a law preventing that. You must take the edible meat out of there. But it's not the law that's forcing people to take the edible meat out. Also, right. That has to be a huge understanding.
And that's evident in all those other states that don't have that law.
And particularly with mountain lion, because it's crazy delicious. Now, I haven't had it yet, but I can only say that from of people who have eaten it, and they're like, it's so good. Like, it's not just edible.
We need a mountain lion cook-off.
Mike said something like, it's not just edible like cabbage. It's actually, it's extraordinary.
Right.
You know?
We need a predator game meat festival in Denver this summer. Like, free. Like, $5. You know, if you say you're an anti-hunter, it's free. If you say you're a vegan, it's free. Like, just... We need to put it, like, make it just an absolute media circus out of people walking in, getting a donated taste of mountain lion tacos and bear carnitas and oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That would be so amazing. Cause Carl's, what you're getting at is their entire, the Colorado issue and the anti-hunting trade, like they did this in California with trying to outlaw bear hunting, they hang the whole thing on trophy hunting. Oh, if you take a picture of it, it's a trophy now, which is such intellectually like just a complete nonsense.
Well, it's just bottom line.
It's a lie. Like it's such a lie, and it's not difficult to demonstrate that it's a complete lie. So they're betting the entire thing on their voter base being deceived.
Yeah. 100%.
Which I think most voters, whether they agree with the hunting issue or not, they a lot of people immediately get a little bit, they get their hackles up if they know they're being lied to.
And it's clearly evident that it goes against CPW's recommendations as shown in their recent presentations on Bobcat and Mountain Lion. It's clearly against the legislature. The legislature voted against it. And the commission has voted against it, like you said. So now it's a lot harder to lie to the legislature, and because it's easier to reach them and have meetings and get them set on, you know, what's true and what's not. It's a lot harder with the general public, so they are relying on lies to get this passed, which is just absurd. It's insane. That's dangerous. And they're not, you know, these groups, they call themselves conservation groups. If they are going against presentation from biologists time after time after time after time after time again, they are not a conservation group.
No,
they're clearly they clearly tell us what they are, and they're an anti-hunting, anti-human,
they're social activists,
wildlife. It actually makes them anti-wildlife.
They're bigots.
How many wildlife experts have to say this is a bad idea? When Stephanie Cimat came and said spring bears is sustainable and we have populations in Washington, what did Washington Wildlife first say? They call themselves a conservation group. Nope, we're against it.
Right.
And that's how we want the commission to go. What did they say when the presentation was given about mountain lions and bear recently in Washington from their staff? Nope, we're against it. They're against the science. They're against wildlife science. They're against wildlife. And they did the exact same thing. And are doing the exact same thing in Colorado.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's the same people.
Again, they work Miller, across.
Who was in Washington is now in Colorado saying, you guys are just trophy hunters and we are against the science and we are against wildlife again. And we're going to lie to the public to get them to vote our way. That is the bottom line of what's happening.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we can win, because we got to expose that lie. Nobody appreciates being lied to.
So somebody's out of state. Let's just get to where the Colorado situation is now. The ballot, they're starting to collect signatures. Assuming they are successful with collecting signatures, it goes on the ballot. How does somebody from out of state or in state, let's look at the two of them, how does somebody from out of state affect the outcome if we know that there's this big lie that's being presented to the average non-hunter? And then how does somebody in state affect the outcome? Let's look at somebody's out of state. We're asking them to get involved. We're asking them to commit to supporting this because it will benefit them and the rest of the hunting community. How do they help out?
Well, I think those tactics, those, you know, things you can get your hands on, those are being worked on right now. Mm-hmm. You know, so what to share.
Is it money? Is money part of the out of state person? Is it largely?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always going to be money. Okay, yeah. Well, of course, yeah. I mean, of course, that's the simple one. Yeah, if you can give money, of course, that's one way you can help.
Because what's that do? What's $50 buy? Like, what is that money going to go to in between now and November?
I can tell you so far what it has gone to. It has gone to a week after, in September, when this initiative would drop, was dropped, Initiative 91, mm-hmm. A week after there were, within a week, there were lawyers hired and a campaign strategist and all that, and it was immediately in court challenging it at the challenging the title mm-hmm. of something about trophy hunting. That was done within a week. So, and then throughout the next few months, basically that money was used to delay the other side, the anti-hunters, from being able to start gathering signatures. So that's just one example.
So we got 4 months, like 4 months of delay by by leveraging the legal strategies available.
Yeah.
Which only happens if you've got a team that's knowledgeable and good at this. And so that 4 months of delay compresses the amount of time that they have to get signatures, and which further compresses the amount of time that they're going to be able to invest in advertising to the non-hunting public.
Yeah. I mean, basically, if you're going to fight something at the, you know, ballot level or whatever level, it's going to require a team. And that's where the money has to go. So messaging, marketing, advertising, polling, events, traveling, all the stuff that it takes, you know, to win an election, essentially.
Paid media.
No, that's where money goes. Yeah, media. Yeah,
buying ads.
I mean, you name it. That's where all the money goes. But I was thinking before, like, what does a person do besides money? Currently right now, the battle is, like, you know, we're kind of getting our sides together, right? Right. So right now it's with the sportsmen. Hey guys, here's what's going on. Let's organize. Let's raise funds. Let's give you information that you can share. Let's get you up to date on what's going on, so you can talk about it intelligently. And how do you share that? That's the kind of things that, you know, we're kind of building right now. When I say we, I'm talking about, like, whoever's running the show. I'm just aware of what's happening.
Right.
But those are things that you can do sitting at home. If you see something on Instagram and it says, hey, go to this link to share the 7 tenets of, you know, the North American model, you can download those to your phone and get those shared out on your platforms.
What accounts should people be following to stay informed about Colorado themselves, and then also help share that content out to other the rest of their community?
CRWM. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of people helping, right? Mm-hmm. Sharing that, but I mean, it's originating at CRWM. Okay. And then, you know, we'll see that and just get that out to more people, or email it to more people, or all of our top secret lists that we have, or whatever, you know what I mean, to get the information out. That's our goal. Yeah. Top secret. That's our goal. It's just, how do we get the person in Georgia and Florida and Maine,
California
to know what's going on here and to contribute however you can. And that has been successful so far. It's been wildly successful so far. It's been way more successful than the entire campaign where Colorado was faced with, should they bring in wolves or not?
Right.
So as far as organization and fundraising, and I mean, you name it, it's like exponentially more successful in just a few months than that entire 17-month campaign.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of reasons for that, but people learned from that loss. But this is a big thing you got to understand. Here's a comment, and we get these all the time, and they frustrate me. But Colorado is over. It's the next California. Woke up too late. I don't know, something like that. But anyways, there's no way, you know, you have a chance. Or if it goes to the
ballot, that's a quitter. Like seriously, that's
exactly what I was saying earlier.
That is a quitter who's never been in the fight themselves.
Understand this on that. So that whole is as disorganized as apparently it was, the wolf thing in Colorado. It lost by like 1%.
Yeah.
It was 1%. A small loss. It ended up being 33,000 people changed the outcome of that vote. That's it. And there are some really wild numbers in different states, but the amount of people who buy hunting licenses or tags who aren't registered to vote is absolutely insane. Now, I saw a number in Colorado, and it's like some people say, yeah, it's true. Some people say, it's a little less than that. Regardless, the number's too high. But I saw a number that said, what was it, 74%?
Yeah, I don't believe that enough to repeat.
I don't either.
But we have heard that there's like 100,000 or 150,000 hunters,
yes,
like hunters, anglers that hold licenses to go play in the woods and harvest things that didn't vote at all,
who aren't registered to vote. Now, in Colorado, that changes the outcome of that.
Yeah, vote. Completely changes the outcome.
Yeah, so you can't say
three times over.
You can't say, three times over. You can't say that my vote isn't going to matter or I can't change this bullshit. If you actually went and took 3 seconds out of your day to check that box and everybody did that and you registered the vote, you can do that right now. It's super easy online. However, you know, I mean, like you can do it anywhere. Bullshit. It changes the outcome of that.
Yeah. We win that game. We win that game. I use the football analogy that too often we're all out in the parking lot, you know, two kegs in and barbecuing and complain about the refs while the other team is in the field on the third quarter, just run up and down the field.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, let's just at least get into the field, get in the arena and make a try at it and start to, you know, move the ball an inch at a time. Like, no, it's not going to be all touchdowns, but we need to start moving the ball. And so that person that said, oh, it's over. It's only over if you remain sidelined and remain in a quitting position.
Yeah, right.
But thankfully there've been wins and there've been opportunities to show that this works. You said 63 donations came in yesterday. Where are these donations coming into? And if I want to be the 64th donor, how do I do that? How do I get money, resources? I'm following CRWM now. I'm following Hal. How do I get resources financially into this fight to see this thing go positive?
SaveTheHuntColorado.com.
Okay.
And go to donate.
Yeah, it's pretty easy.
SaveTheHuntColorado.com. That's the resource where people can make donations.
That is the group that is. So I'm saying this, you know, like from Hal, I just know because I talked to him on the phone or you know, I just know this information. None of this goes through Hal at all,
right,
whatsoever. That's the organization that is spearheading this fight. And again, they're the ones that have the lawyers and the pollsters and the campaign team and the marketers and the messages, the whole thing. They got all that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So that's where the money needs to go.
Yeah. They're set up or organizationally, they're set up in a way to make these fights. Like they don't buy land. Yeah. They don't do tree work. They don't do forest work. They are, a lot of other orgs that we support and love do work for the critters. CRWM is set up in Colorado to do the advocacy work on behalf of the hunting, angling, sportsman, outdoors community, wildlife management community.
Yeah. And register to vote.
Yeah. I want to speak to something specifically
about right?
what you just said. I think what happens, and I know it happened, or I used to think this way probably 5 or 6 years ago. I am a supporter of RMEF, Mule Deer Foundation, National Wild Turkey. Like I support probably 5 or 6 national organizations. Mm-hmm. So I think what happens a lot of times, and I know it happened to speak from my own personal experiences, in my head, I'm like, well, I'm a Sportsman's Alliance and I support SEI. I'm sending my money to these people and that's all I need to do. They're going to take care of it for me.
Checks the box.
I've done my part. I've, you know, I'm shelling out $600 a year between all of them and I've done my part. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is that, especially with the critter organizations, not necessarily Sportsman's Alliance and SEI, but but the credit orgs, they're all 501c3s. They all have a certain mission, and they have to operate within that mission to maintain their 501c3 status. And they were designed to put critters back on the mountain. Do, you know, habitat restoration, yada, yada, yada. So they're not really even allowed to get involved in a political manner, or they are to a certain extent. And we're learning all this as we go along, navigating this part of it. But they're only allowed to get, so your funding is going to a good place. And I'm not saying stop doing that. This is not what I'm saying.
Through the Blackwater bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. From the Mississippi Delta in Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest, me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. For even more content, be sure to watch the original films from HuntStand Presents on the Waypoint TV channel every Tuesday at 10 p.m. Eastern. Visit waypointtv.com to learn more.
It doesn't give you the license to sit back on your haunches and not get involved in things, because chances are that money is not going to protecting your rights.
Right. Hey, expectation is the mother of disappointment, right? If you expect RMEF to do work that puts more, that gets involved in elk human conflict issues or elk habitat improvement, elk wildlife crossings, you are expecting the right thing from RMEF, and they're really freaking good at it. If you're expecting them to get involved and drive, you know, 50 state advocacy to support bear hunting in California, it's not their thing. Like, no. It's just that you will be disappointed if that's what you expect. And I lived that myself 2 years ago. If you expect Howl to buy land to commit, you know, to dedicate to antelope, you know, in Prescott Valley, in Arizona, like, Howl's not going to do that. Like, you'll be disappointed. You'll be disappointed enough. You'll mostly be disappointed that Hal's not doing that, but if you expect Hal to inform you and give you an advocacy portal where you can efficiently and effectively drive your words of support towards something at a regulatory level, you will be happy. And so I think it's just, the key is that, like you said, like, that they're good at what they do, but they don't do advocacy. And in this realm with Colorado, CRWM is the C4, is the organization,
right,
that is designed for the purpose of getting the team together and funding, paying for, through mostly donations, paying for a battle at the ballot box that we can win.
Well, I mean, that's a perfect example right there. So we're an organization. We need money. And we recognize that we can't do what CRWM is doing for this specific, you know, normally we could be very effective because we can get people involved and have them voice their opinion, where this, because it's a ballot thing, it's specific to voters in Colorado. So we can't, you know, at some point we could probably get involved in that to organize people that are, you know, but actually checking a box on a ballot, we cannot do. So Hal recognized that. We would love to see your donations come to us, but we know that the most effective way to win this is to have that money go to the tip of the spear, which is CRWM at this point.
SaveTheHuntColorado.com.
I feel like we didn't really do a great job, because we're sitting here talking to us three, and we know the issue,
Like, so how do we recap it? Like, we know that the ballot initiative.
Explain what's going on there.
There's a ballot initiative. They're getting signatures. You talked to Dan, like fundraising for CRWM is happening. They want and need donations. What are the other kind of most immediate recent like tactical updates?
Tactical updates. I think, one of the things that Dan and I spoke to with towards the end there was something that I've been personally preaching, and I know we at Howell have been doing it as well, is becoming a better steward of hunting by educating yourself. And what I mean by that is we can win a lot of wars, a lot of battles, if we're better players. What I'm saying is, if we can educate ourselves on the North American model of wildlife conservation, if we can ask ourselves, why do we hunt, and put that into words in a way, and package that in a way that you can convey that to somebody who doesn't hunt so they can understand where you're coming from,
mm-hmm.
and be just like a good conduit for explaining what hunting is, what hunting does, where the money comes from, where the what is conservation versus preservation. Education, arming yourselves with this, like a 30-second dialogue that you can recall very easily. That way you can, we all interact, you know, with people who are non-hunters on a daily basis at work, you know, at any different level. And if we can have these nuanced conversations with people and plant the seeds, they will have a better understanding of what hunting is. They will maybe have a connection with you. And when the ballot comes up, whether it's this one in Colorado or it's going for whitetail hunting in Georgia, whatever the case may be, when it comes up, you will have created a potentially sympathetic ally. You know, they may not see eye to eye with you on everything, but it's the same thing like inviting people over for, you know, wild game meals, you know, having conversations constantly about it, but portraying all the human intrinsic values of what it is to be a hunter. It can't always be about the money, and definitely can't be about, oh, it's a challenge and I like the adrenaline rush. Like, all hunters, we all enjoy the adrenaline rush. We all enjoy the challenge. Like, it's part of hunting. And we'd all be lying to ourselves if we didn't agree that that is something that is an important part. But it's not the only part.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not the only thing. Like, people need to see what hunting is through your eyes. But you need to be able to do it in a way, one, that you're not going to offend people.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you don't want to do hunting a disservice by, you know, the last thing a person wants to hear, well, this is my right, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't.
That doesn't do well, right?
Doesn't win. I mean, it may be correct, but it doesn't right. Sway the conversation.
Exactly. So the goal is to have conversations. Like, you want to do good. Now, the last thing I want to do is create an army of people that are going to sway people the wrong way. So you need to be mindful of how you go about this. And it might not be something that you come up with in a week's time, you know, and hopefully we'll have some information for you guys to do that.
I was talking to Garrett Weaver yesterday. We were just on his podcast, and, he pointed out he had a friend who, progressive liberal, anti-hunting,
mm-hmm.
for all the reasons that you would expect her to be anti-hunting, because everything she's been told. all the caricatures of the hunter and where extinctions come from, and we just go out and shoot stuff, and you know, all the trophy hunting lies, all that. And it, where he won with her was asking her questions like, why do you think that? Like, because she'd make some statement about, well, you know, about trophy hunting. Like, what does that mean to you when you say that word? What does that mean to you? Mm-hmm. It was a lot about asking questions to unravel this really nasty ball of, you know, misconception, misperception that she had. And she only had it because somebody else had given it to her, you know? And so, and it took time. It was very nuanced, but it took time. But as that ball of lies was unraveled, and he could then share, well, you know, this is my experience. This is what we do. And this is what we see. And this, you know, there's another side to the coin. She's now like, as she's a fervent supporter of regulated legal hunting as part of wildlife management. She's a believer.
Sure.
And so obviously not every conversation will have a long, you won't have that time,
right?
But within all of our spheres, we do have time. Like, we work with somebody, we see them every day. You can lace, you know, talk to somebody 5 minutes a week on the issue, and all of a sudden you've steered the ship around. But a lot of it can be done with asking questions to understand why they think the way they do.
Sure.
And a lot of times you're going to uncover that they have been given bad information.
Yep. Absolutely.
And you can't blame them for having been given bad information if we haven't given them good information.
Exactly. And that's kind of what I was getting at is,
yeah,
let's get the good information. Let's
understand
it so we can put that out there, because we have 70 years of the other side painting this picture of you as the bloodthirsty, you know, Elmer Fudd, name it, think of derogatory, like look at any single mainstream media thing out there about hunters. It's typically negative or, you know, anti-hero, you name it. So I think that's an important battle to win, but I don't want to spend too much more time on that because we got
some time still. Cause I think there's at least one other topic.
We
should touch on. Yeah. What's going on in Washington?
Go ahead,
I'll start. PN Wild podcast. PN Wild is doing an amazing fundraiser. Those guys sat around the campfire a week or two ago and decided to do a fundraiser for Howl for Wildlife that everybody in North America can participate in. They're selling a t-shirt. It's a very cool, simple, says bear hunting is conservation. They're big into bear hunting. We're big into bear hunting. A lot of you that are listening are big into bear hunting. It says bear hunting is conservation, and they're kicking down 50% of the revenue, not the income, not the profit, but the top line revenue from this t-shirt sale. 50% they're kicking down to Howl for Wildlife, and they're going to close that out on February 26th. So if you're hearing this between now and February 26th, jump onto PN Wild's website and buy yourself a dozen or so t-shirts.
Well, that's when the pre-orders end.
That's when the pre-orders end.
Okay. Yeah, they're actually going to keep it going past that, but that's when the pre-orders end. Is
phenomenal. Phenomenal.
Yeah, and there's been a ton of shirts sold.
Well, and our golly, Cameron Haynes, Go Hunt. Am I missing anybody? Those three are matching.
No, I think that's it.
Matching the donation. So it's insane. So your $30 t-shirt that you buy to advertise that bear hunting is conservation, yields upwards of a $60 donation through the magic of matching funds to Howl for Wildlife. Massive support from the hunting community in a way that I don't know, we haven't seen. And it's just, I think it's people are realizing that the need for advocacy, the need for the right communication into these select markets is needed. And it's going to really equip us to help out with that.
And why did that all come about? Being wild, yes. Wild because
Washington. How we've
been super involved in things going on in Oregon and Washington. And right now, Washington, actually, we have a positive bill that we can get behind. Charles, you want to get into that or?
SJR 8208, the right to hunt and fish, trap, harvest, gather, all that in Washington, brought about out of nowhere, kind of. Nobody really knew it was going to come up, which is actually unfortunate, but it's a bipartisan bill, meaning Republicans and Democrat senators have sponsored a bill to get that into the state's constitution. So it has to go. It's currently in the Rules Committee. It's got to get out of that. I don't know when that, I don't think it's scheduled right now. I don't know when that's scheduled, but if it does that, it goes to the Senate, then it's got to pass through the Senate. If it does that, then it's got to pass through the House. And then, I don't know if it then goes to the governor on these things, but anyway, if this all passes, it then goes on the ballot this year in 2024, which is a little crazy for the, I say a little crazy because it's like a quick turnaround on this. But the general populace would vote on that to have that a part of their constitution or not. And, it is extremely positive and it would.
Okay. Let's say, what does that do specifically? Cause I know a lot of people like, well, I already have a right to hunt and fish, but.
Well, you don't. For the people who say that, that's not, it's always going to be a privilege to do it. And it's always going to be something you can lose. When there's a right to hunt and fish in a state, what that essentially is saying is so all the normal processes of setting your seasons and quotas and all that are still there. None of that goes away. What that means is if through that process, let's just say the department determines and recommends and says, yes, you have a huntable population of deer still or elk still or whatever it is, or yeah, you can fish for salmon, or no, you can fish, or no, you can't fish for salmon, depending on, you know, what's going on at the time. If the science and the data supports you being able to hunt that particular population, then you have a right to that. It can't be taken away by anti-hunting, anti-human, anti-wildlife orgs like Washington Wildlife First when they come to the commission, when they come to the commission and say, we don't think you should hunt bear because bears are sentient beings and have families. So some emotional reason that means you can't lose hunting by something as frivolous as that. That's really what it means. If you do something wrong, you can still lose your privilege, right, whatever you want to call it, to hunt if you do something wrong. It doesn't mean you can trespass. It doesn't mean you can just go kill whatever animal you want at any point in time because now you just have a right to it. It doesn't mean any of that whatsoever. There are rules. It means that the good rules that are there, where it's based on data and science, that means you will get to retain those hunting rights, fishing rights, when the science supports it. So what it's really doing is setting up a roadblock against anti-hunters. And if they do want to take something to the ballot, they would need, I don't know what it is.
Supermajority?
Like a 67%. Supermajority. Yeah, for something to pass.
They basically have to have enough votes to make a constitutional amendment.
Yeah.
Like it puts it at that level. Why would five senators just walk a very clean, simple, you know, one paragraph bill out, unbeknownst to the stakeholders that will benefit from it or consider it a threat? Why would they pop this out on the landscape? What are they responding to, if you were to guess?
Because I think they see the corruptness of and the irresponsibility of the current commission in Washington and how they have constantly, well, Senator Short, one of the sponsors on here, she brought it up. They are going against the recommendations of their department over and over and over again.
Right.
So they've become their own
kind of rogue
Supreme Court. And they're like, we make the rules and, you know, science doesn't matter. The only science that does matter is agenda driven science from biologists who are on, you know, some extremist anti hunting organization board or something like that. So
right.
That's why, because it's getting out of control there.
Yeah.
The commission's completely out of control. So they're trying to combat this with a right to hunt and fish. I wish there was a little more time on it, but there isn't. It is what it is. And I also wish that more sportsman organizations would nut up and get behind it publicly and get their people involved in it instead of just being afraid of losing.
I'll say bizarre. That too. It's bizarre. That is frustrating. If this gets out of the House, it gets through the Senate, gets out of the House or the Assembly, whatever you call it there in Washington, and this gets to a public vote, it's going to be, well, it's going to give the anti-hunting trade a two-front war. They're going to have to deal with that in Washington while they deal with Colorado. So that is good because they have resources, but they're not infinite. But it also, we have resources, but ours are not infinite either, and ours are not always not as well organized. But that means we're going to need to get behind that ballot initiative in Washington. I think the fact, and this is where, again, the non-hunter is so critical. Commissioners are seated by the governor. So there's political influence. The governor has a certain leaning. They're going to choose commissioners that might, be might be biased, less objective. So it looks like that's happened. But those commissioners are also approved in the Senate. The senators are electeds. And so I'm hopeful, regardless of outcome on this right to hunt and fish forage constitutional amendment, regardless of outcome, I'm hopeful that we can start to sway the non-hunter public opinion and sentiment to see and understand that they have a commission who's rogue and ignoring science, the best available science, ignoring their charter, and that politically in the Senate, we can start to put pressure on the electeds to either start removing commissioners or at least not confirming commissioners that are so blatantly flawed. And again, this is like where we as a hunting community will never have the majority votes. Like we can't R3 ourselves into the majority. It's not going to happen. But we can get relationship, relatability, and relevance with the non-hunting public to at least want good science to be done. Same right. thing as in Colorado. You want good science happening in Washington State, and they've got a commission that just flagrantly ignores the best available science is coming out of their department. And so we need the general public there as well to become part of the voice that tells the electeds to get their house in order.
Yep, absolutely. Well,
so right now on that, you can call. We have a call action set up, not an email yet.
Is I know we talked about this. The calling in has much more effect than an email. Like if you call and leave a message, or you call and talk to somebody and deliver a message with the electeds, it has a much stronger effect. Have you set up that way because it's stronger, or because the email function just isn't an option right now, like with the way they have their intake system set up?
No, it is. Emailing is an option. It was just, these were turning around in just a couple of days.
Yeah.
And I just felt like, let's see how many people can call. That's going to have a better immediate effect. And it's a real person,
right?
On the other side of that call. And,
well, I actually got to speak to one.
I wanted, When I called, I spoke to a few people. I gave some, left some messages, but there's some of the anti-hunting orgs, they say we're fraudulent because we aren't real people that are sending in the emails. We're using bots or something like that. So I'm like, all right, we'll pick up the phone and call. Mm-hmm. So, and 398 individuals have picked up the phone and called, which
that's huge.
Yeah. Which means that I don't know how many senators they got through the list, but how many senators were there in this latest one? Is it 17?
Is it still active? Is this action still active? And for how long? Because we don't know when people are going to listen to this. How long will this action be effective, you think, for the life cycle, or when they go to the action center? How long will we have? What's our timeline get involved and have a voice on this?
This bill's sitting in the Rules Committee right now. So it's up to them to vote on it and get it out of there. So I don't know when that's going to happen, but that's where the calls are going right now, to the 17 sitting members of the Rules Committee. So if people have made it through all 17, which I doubt they did, that'd be 6,766 calls. But let's say they made it through three. I mean, that's over 1,000 calls. That's just as powerful, as maybe more powerful. I don't even know if it's comparable, but you know,
probably 10x, probably 10x.
Yeah. So, but one of the cool things that I think we're going to have soon here to combat the whole email thing is you will be able to record a 30-second video and send. So you get 30 seconds, you record your own video, and then that gets sent to every decision maker. So now they can see your face and be like, I'm a real person. And we can follow up with it on an email, but look, these are real people.
They better crank up their server storage.
Yeah. Well, I think it probably comes through as a link. So you
okay.
So it's not.
Yeah.
But it's only 30 seconds long.
We have to crank up our server storage.
somebody's server storage is going to have to crank up. That's awesome. I mean, that's the tech difference. That's where Howl has been so different than the other advocacy channels is how customized and precise the messaging can be. So basically, no matter when you're listening to this podcast, today is February 6th. It's active now, but we will have an action item on the action center at howlforwildlife.org that addresses and gives you an opportunity to act on this issue in Washington State.
Yeah.
As long as it's functional. And so if you go to the action center at howlforwildlife.org, and it's there, dive in and maybe it'll switch to this video record, stay as a call record, calling in, email, like dive in and do those actions, because those actions work. And the beautiful thing is,
it doesn't take much time.
You can support your Washingtonians from Florida. You can support your Washington hunters and wildlife community from anywhere that you are. And your voice can matter in that regard. So I think it's so powerful.
Yeah. And if we don't get this, if we don't win this, like I've heard, we might not win. We want to have a couple of years to prepare for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's say it dies here in the Senate or in the House, or even if it made it and it, you know, it died there. Try it again.
Yeah.
Keep going over and over. That's also what the Anaheimers do. They lose all the time and they come back and fight again the next year. You know?
Yep.
Stop being a bunch of freaking wimps.
Yeah.
Just organize and do something.
They tool up and grind away on it and keep asking their supporters for money. I get 7 emails a week between the 3 anti-hunting groups that I happen to, you know, get spam from. And it's always a crisis. There's always a crisis. They're always asking for money.
Oh, they're losing their minds right now because the Biden administration actually decided against their wolf classification, and they're just losing their minds. They're like, "Your blood, the blood of wolves is on your hands, Joe Biden," and all this stuff. And it's like, man, thank you, Joe Biden, for this one.
Yeah,
even though he wasn't making the decision, but. You know, wolves have there's a number, a management number that they've reached and gone way beyond. They're not threatened, they're not endangered, and you can't treat them as such when they've passed those data points. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just what really exposes these. That's why these groups are not conservation groups. There's nothing conservation about them.
No.
At all.
There's no number that they will say, okay, we've reached this threshold. Let's manage these animals proactively.
Yeah.
There's that number in California with black bears, grizzly bears in the Northern Rockies, wolves. that number doesn't exist, because as soon as that number is met, if there were such a number, they would not have a crisis to call out to fundraise with their community, and they wouldn't have anything for their lawyers to do with the Equal Access for Justice Act. It is an industry for them. Like, the farm that they till is the crisis of wolves aren't recovered. Like, as soon as that crisis is gone, they've lost their, they have no job.
There's nothing conservation about any of that. It's just, they are just, here's a crisis, let's make money off of it, create a bunch of lies.
Yeah.
To, and get people who aren't paying attention to subscribe to their folly.
Yep.
Other than that, in Washington, there's always the commission, but, you know, I don't have faith in the commission at all. I do think they are bought and paid for. That's just my opinion. But it is important to keep showing up in numbers and giving them a hard time, polite, respectfully, and it's great because it gets them to talk, it gets them to say things, which I think continually exposes. Oh yeah, they just can't shut up, which is a great thing, I think. It gives the department a chance to give their side, even though they can only give a recommendation, but it gives everybody a chance to hear the science, right? And then gives the commission, again, a chance to make a decision based on science or based on whatever your agenda is. That's important to not ignore that. But it's going to take, a lot more to I think, shift those, shift how that whole decision making is done. There is still a Beaver bill, that Beaver bill, SB 5846. We definitely brought light to that, and it was, on paper, the original bill wasn't terrible. There was a section in there that talked about restricting beaver trapping, I believe. But the big red flag there was Washington Wildlife first said in their announcement to their supporters is, this is the first step to banning trapping. Well, how is this the first step to that? And then Senator Short brought it up in the hearing, the committee member hearing, that rulemaking will be, for this bill, if it passes, rulemaking, they'll rely on WDFW for that, which then, of course, the final decision will go to the commission. And the commission, she said, is often, you know, noted for going against the department's regulation recommendations. So this bill could turn into an anti-trapping bill. All right. So we should do a podcast with them, with the Methow Beaver Project, Alexis or Alexa. Can't remember her last name, but she called me and was like, hey, you know, we're in support of this bill. Here's our intentions of this bill. Our intentions is nothing anti-trapping. And in fact, I've told those who have these intentions to lay off and to stop. And she's spoken even with commissioners and said, you guys are anti-trapping. We know you want this to be anti-trapping. You need to stop or I'm pulling my support. We have no anti-trapping intentions here whatsoever. We want to have, in addition to trapping, which is sometimes necessary, she recognizes the benefits of trapping. We just want to also have relocation efforts or coexistence efforts be available to the landowners so they can choose what options they want to go. But we're not anti-trapping at all on this. Well, the bill has now, and I got to tell you, it's because of the people who got involved and made a big stink about this. The bill has had, it now has amended language that is much more in support of managing beavers, right? Not restricting trapping or anything like that, but managing beavers through the use of relocation, coexistence, or trapping. And I have trust issues, right? Because either way, it's still going to go to the commission, even though, you know, I think it's been made clear to them, leave your anti-trapping, anti-hunting hands off of this, or you're going to lose a lot of support. So I still, you know, have some trust issues, but we'll see where the bill goes. I'm kind of just neutral on it right now because it's tough to. The original intent of the sponsor, Solomon, was anti-trapping.
Yeah.
Right. He's changed it. He's changed his mind. But still, like, I'm like, all right, if this was your original intent, it's hard for me to trust you.
Let's get that conversation set up so more people can understand.
It's an interesting conversation.
The Beaver proponents.
Yeah.
It'd be great to have that conversation that you had expanded on and shared publicly. It would also be great if they would go to the commission proactively and make their statement in the public venue of what their intention is. And as the Beaver proponent biologists, you know, community, what they know that they don't want to have happen, to get that on the table. But let's definitely set that up.
I would love to be in support of this bill. It's just, you know, there is obvious behind the scenes talks between the anti-hunting organizations and some of the commissioners. I mean, you had, besides the anti-hunting organization saying this is the first step to banning trapping, you had one of the most notorious commissioners show up to that committee meeting and give testimony in support of this. And,
right,
you know, it's like, connect the dots, you know. I mean, come on. And now we know also the blue sheet that came up in November of 2022 from Commissioner Rollin on beaver management. I know now for a fact her intent was anti-trapping.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hey, but you got nothing to worry about in Washington.
Right.
That's what they say. We don't need a right to hunt and fish because there's no hunting and fishing isn't under threat. That was actually said.
The other thing that they say, and the more we get, like you said, the more we get them talking, whatever the venue, the more they show their hand, like the whole, only 3% of, you know, Washingtonians participate in this activity. You know, it's like the show. Tell me you're a bigot without telling me you're a bigot.
Yeah.
You know, tell me you have a cultural bias against something that's completely sustainable and natural without telling me you're a bigot. The whole, like, a minority group of people participates in this. And then the fact that they lie so much about that group of people that they're talking about is to be sidelined. Like, they.
Well, but it's also that 3% does, that 3% isn't responsible for 3% of the budget or the funding or the conservation dollars, right, or the ecotourism that hunting is. It's so much money that 3% is spending, that they don't like to talk about that either. And when they do, they massively, massively, massively skew it. It's just, it's just crazy that what's coming out of this whole rewilding thing and Wildlife for All and all that, where they're basically just saying, there's not a lot of funds come from hunters, from sportsmen.
Right.
That's all myth. It's billions of dollars.
Yeah.
The economic impact, it is ecotourism.
Yeah.
Right.
It's sustainable.
Billions and billions and billions of dollars. It's sustainable. Just stop. Like, it's really hard to even talk about because they're coming so far out of left field. It's like arguing with flat earthers. It's like, all right, cool. I mean, what do you want me to, you know, it's almost useless to talk about. It's so wild.
I think that's a good time right now. I want to thank everybody that is participating in this program of syndicating. That says to me that you get it. You understand how important it is to set your personal, I don't even know what to say, aside, and bring light to what Howlful Wildlife is doing, what we're trying to accomplish in the community, and those listening in on this, as you get exposed to more of this, you're going to understand and know the importance of why you should be involved in everything hunting across the United States as a national thing, and even internationally when those are presented. So, thanks again for tuning in. behalf of myself, Alpha Wildlife, Mike, and Charles, I think we appreciate you coming along on this journey and listening in on this first episode of the syndication.
Hey everyone, Will Cooper here, host of Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of hunting and outdoor pursuits. We've brought together some of the most accomplished individuals in the industry to share their invaluable insights and experiences with you. But here's the kicker. It's not just about hunting tips and tactics. We're exploring how you can carve your own path, elevate your skills, and gain some wisdom from the best in the field. So whether you're a seasoned hunter looking to fine-tune your skills or a newbie eager to learn, our podcast has something for everyone. Stay tuned for more exciting guests and hotter topics. Don't miss out and subscribe to Hunt Stand's Make Your Mark podcast today and start making your mark in the great outdoors.
Don't miss Thursdays with Saltwater Experience, brought to you by Golden Boat Lifts, every Thursday night from 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.